This is the Bible Show. Welcome, folks, to another episode of the Bible Show. My name is Sam Kasten Smith, and joining me today is Will Bushman.
Hello, Sam.
And we are talking about another miracle in the life of Jesus, continuing in our series. And today's a pretty famous one. It's in three of the Gospels. This is about Jesus calming a storm. And so you hear this taught a lot. And every time you hear this, what's usually the context that you hear it in?
Like personal storms.
Yeah, personal storms, which I think is totally appropriate.
Yeah.
I think that you can take this story and say, okay, we deal with storms. And I think when God ordains this, we're meant to see this in that way, to where we can okay, I might not be out in a boat, and I might not be, you know, in a storm getting battered around and rained on, but life can certainly feel that way a lot of times. And this is instructive for us to recognize, like, okay, what is having Jesus in our boat? What does that do for us? And so we have talked about this before in the miracle series, but Jesus doesn't do parlor tricks. He's not out there to be like, hey guys, watch this. I got a really cool trick.
Yeah.
It's meant to teach us something in every one of his miracles, and it's meant to kind of show us what he is ultimately bringing and what he alone can ultimately bring us in this life. And so when you look at this miracle through that lens, it's really instructive.
Yeah, it's just interesting that Jesus chooses to do this one, I think. Mm-hmm. I think this one's one of the more fascinating ones, because you get like, oh, a lame man obviously desires to walk, mm-hmm. and he's been that way, but now this one's just for his disciples, and it's a lesson.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that when you go back and you look through all of the different miracles, like most of the miracles are kind of like localized, and it's something that's right in front of him. It's, you know, healing a lame man, or the guy with the withered hand, or turning water to wine, or it's something like that. But it's like, you could imagine somehow like a David Blaine or something doing something weird where it's like, how did he do that? Like, yeah. I mean, raising the dead, maybe not. But this is the first time. I mean, the catching of the fish would have been pretty wild and astonishing. Like, what do? You have a secret aquarium down there? Like, how is this working? Like, but speaking to the weather, which is what we're going to see here today, this is the first time that he says, hey, it's not just health, you know, and it's not just your physical body. It's not the material elements of things. I'm literally looking up at, you know, a hurricane and saying, stop it. You know, and that's what he's going to do today. And this shows you that he is not just a God or a healer or somebody that's anointed. He is the God, the controller, the one who is sovereign over nature itself. And this is the first time we see that out of him. And it would have been mind-blowing to those disciples.
Yeah, we're going to read it out of Mark, but I love where Matthew puts it in Matthew 8, it comes right after Jesus talking about like the cost of following after him. Like, mm-hmm. the foxes have holes, birds have nests, and the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Follow me and leave the dead to bury their dead. Mm-hmm. And you hear that, and it's just like, I mean, jarring for them, I'm sure. But then the storm hits, and you're like, wait, I really don't want to follow you if I have to do that plus storms are coming.
Yeah.
And it's one of those ones where like, oh no, Jesus is teaching them something here. Like, he's giving them like, this is what life's going to be like, but I'm going to be with you.
It's really good, because when you follow Jesus, it's not like the storms go away. I mean, before we press the record button, we got storms going on. You know, there's always some new thing, some new conflict, some new challenge, some new whatever it might be, that's always kind of smacking us in the head. And Jesus is saying, hey, like, to follow me, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And then the first thing that he takes him to is in the middle of a storm. And it's like, you know, and both of the miracles where he's out on the water, the other one is when Jesus walks on water that we're going to talk about in our next episode, I think. But in both of them, they're out in the sea. And I think this is fascinating because they obeyed. Mm. Like, if Jesus had said, all right, guys, you know, we're going across the lake. And they were like, Are you seeing the skies? Like, they're starting to get pretty dark. The wind is starting to pick up. Like, why don't we just row right back to shore? You know, you've just preached your sermon. Take a rest. We'll be safe on the shore. But Jesus is like, no, we're going to row across the Sea of Galilee and go to the other side. And they say, okay, it doesn't look like great conditions to be out on the sea, but okay, we'll obey. We'll obey. You know, you're the leader. We're in.
Yeah, we're following.
And then a storm hits and you're like, you gotta wonder, like, are they out there going, what is he doing to us? Why has he put us here?
Yeah, I guess there's only two options for them thinking that. Either Jesus doesn't control the storm, which he proves that he does.
Correct.
In the end, so either he just doesn't have that ability, or that Jesus wanted them to enter into the storm and planned it.
That's it. And I mean, and in either case, at a minimum, they recognize this guy's a prophet. Like, you know, they recognize, you know, when the catch happens, you know, Peter says, depart from me, Lord, for I'm a sinful man. Like, they've seen, like, this is not an ordinary man. This is not an ordinary prophet. But even if he's a prophet, he should have the wisdom to be able to look at the skies and be like, not a good time to be out in a boat.
Yeah.
Like, this just feels like folly unless he's teaching them something. And so you're going to see they have no idea what he's up to. They're not excited about the lesson that he's teaching them in the middle of this. And yet I think it's really important because sometimes when we're in the middle of storms, it's so easy for us to be like, all right, one, either God is punishing me for something I've done. Like I'm disobedient. And so now here's the consequence. Mm. Or he has stopped caring about me. And you see a little bit of both of those presumptions in the story. Like, on one hand, it's like, why are we in the middle of a storm? Like, why would you bring us out here? What in the world is going on? And then when they ask him the question that we're going to see, it's, do you even care? Mm. So let's just jump into the story. It says, on that day, well, what day is this? He's just finished teaching. He's finished preaching parables. And when he's on the shores of Galilee, where does Jesus usually teach from? He teaches from a boat.
Yeah.
And so, like, at the beginning of this story, and by the way, we're in Mark chapter 4, verse 35, it says, on that day, when evening had come, so he's been out there preaching, probably in the boat, he said to them, let's go across to the other side. So rather than going straight to the shore that's right there, let's just go straight on over to the other side. I can't remember what the exact measurements are, but the Sea of Galilee, I think at its widest point is like 8 miles wide and 13 miles long. But when you get to the northern side of it, it, you know, it gets a little bit more narrow, so it would still be like a 5 mile row.
It's bigger than I imagined when you're on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when I read it and then we saw it a couple years back, I was like, oh, this is bigger than I thought.
Yeah, yeah. And it's down, like, if you look all around the Sea of Galilee, there's, like, hills and mountains mm-hmm. around it, the mountains of Moab on one side, the hills of Galilee that are, you know, they're fairly steep hills on the other side. But what that does is it creates this bowl where you get, you know, changes in temperature and the wind is mm-hmm. rushing back and forth up and down over those mountains. And it creates, like, pretty volatile weather patterns and pretty vicious storms on the sea. And so storms are not uncommon on the Sea of Galilee. It says, on that day, when evening had come, he just finished preaching, he said to him, let's go across to the other side. And after leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. Now, the other boats are like people who are...
Just following along.
Like, okay. We heard the sermon, we got good seats, front row seats for the sermon of Jesus. Now he starts going to the other side. And they're like, let's follow him. Jesus is like, I really need rest. I'm exhausted. Let's go to the other side and leave the crowds behind. And they're like, cool, we'll come with you. And which is pretty amazing. And verse 37, it says, a great windstorm arose. And that Greek word there is interesting. It's, first off, you've got great, the word megas in the Greek. And then the word for windstorm there can also mean hurricane. Hmm. Like, this is no, you know, afternoon drizzle. This is a severe megas hurricane. It's bad. They've not seen stuff like this before this moment, and they're freaking out. And they're fishermen, right?
Yeah, so if they're scared, I would be very scared.
That's correct. Like, so you gotta, like, it's inviting you to imagine this situation. So, like, have you ever been outside in a hurricane?
Yeah, I mean, not like in the midst of the bad part, but
yeah, so I
mean, my parents didn't let me walk out when it was coming across.
Well, why not?
Because they're parents.
My parents were like, go play in the street. No, I'm kidding. But I can remember, like, as a kid, like 13, 14 years old, when the eye would come over. Like, we were in Vero one year when the eye came over. And you go out, because during the hurricane, it has the eeriest sounds, like the wind and hitting things and whistling through things. And it's like, it sounds like it's haunting. Yeah. Like, ooh. I mean, it's weird sounding. And so I went outside one time, and I just remember hearing the trees when it was starting to pick back up. The trees are like, like the wood is stretching and tense. And it was like, I went inside real quick.
Yeah.
Real quick, because their storms are scary. And it says the waves were breaking into the boat. Now, on a Sea of Galilee, something that size, it's not like you've got enormous swells like you're going to find in the Pacific Ocean during a crazy storm. But it's bad enough to where the waves are now breaking into the boat. And so you're to imagine this. You've got a crazy hurricane that's blowing like crazy. It's intense. It's terrifying. Waves are literally breaking into the boat. Everything is soaked. The boat is beginning to fill. And so that's you got your imagination hat on, right?
And just imagine the boat that they're in. Like, this would be scary in a modern day boat.
Yes. But,
and when you get to the Sea of Galilee, you go to this museum.
I'll never forget.
And you take this large motorized boat because you're a tourist and it's modern day, and you're going to go see a galley, and you're like, oh, this is so beautiful, and hopefully you're there on a good day. But then you end up at this museum that has, like, the remnants of a boat from the first century. And when you look at it, you're like, that's it?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's degraded a lot, but you can imagine the full size one. It's not.
Yeah, it's like literally branches that are thrown together. It's not like planks that we imagine, oh, they're smoothed and nice and curved and they fit together really nice. You literally see like zigs and zags in the branches that are kind of put together in the bottom of this. And you know, I mean, they had pitch or tar and all that kind of stuff that they're sealing it with. But you're looking at this being like, it would not take too powerful of a wave to just smash this thing to smithereens. Like, I can't imagine being in a boat like that when this storm is happening. And I would imagine it's not just the waves coming over, but if this thing's really getting battered like you would in a hurricane or an intense windstorm, you're worried about this thing coming apart.
Yeah, there's a lot of fears that could be happening right now.
And by the way, notice how this began, because this adds to the fear of it. On that day when evening came.
Oh, yeah, I forgot they're in darkness.
So, yeah, you imagine this story, and it's light outside.
I do, yeah, for sure.
Right? So now imagine you don't know when the wave is coming.
Yeah.
You don't know what's about to sweep over you. It's not like your boat has the little red and green lights on it, and, you know, you don't know what's coming. Yeah. And unless there's a moon that's not obstructed by the storm clouds, every new shift and battering and rain and wind and everything is a surprise. This is terrifying, and you're meant to enter in, like, visualize this. And then you get to the next verse, 38, in this rickety boat. And verse 38 says, but he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And you're like, what?
Jesus, just a nice sleeper.
Like, how do you make sense of that? Like, that of this whole story, that's right up there with the hardest thing to believe. In the middle of a hurricane, and it's not like, you know, oh, I was downstairs in the boat in the nice, you know, they didn't have rooms in the boat, you know.
And he's not,
in the elements.
And he's not just like keeping his eyes closed to teach him a lesson. Like, he's not fake calming.
Yeah.
He's really asleep.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Which is crazy. It's like, I used to, if you want to wake somebody up, what do you do to them?
When, in a mean way?
Well, no, but like,
an alarm clock, shake them.
You shake them. What's happening to this boat?
It's being shaken.
It's being shaken.
Or the meanest way you can wake somebody up is dumping a bucket of water on
Correct.
Them.
Correct. That's where I was going next. So shaking, he's out. Right? Nothing's budging him. And then water is all over the place. The boat's filling with water. The rain's coming down. The waves are crashing over and he's asleep. Like that in and of itself is supernatural. You pour water on me and I'm awake. And I'm awake. And if somebody dumps water on you, why does it wake you up?
It's cold. I don't know. It's water hitting you when you're asleep.
That facial expression.
Yeah, I was like.
But it's like you're panicked because it's not normal. Like, this circumstance just radically changed and something's not safe. And you like, you know, you wake up. I remember when I was in high school, one of my friends who lived on the road next to me had a little sister who was a terror, absolute terror. And his dad, don't do this if you're listening to this. This is really a terrible thing to do. But he would be sleeping in his recliner, and she was like, I don't know, 13 at the time, and just for no reason would go fill a cup up from the fridge and then dump water on him as he's sleeping in the recliner. And then all kinds of bedlam would take place in this house. And it was just like, I'm trying to, if I did that to my dad, like, I probably wouldn't be here today. But he woke up in an absolute panic with this cold water being dumped on him. And, you know,
as you should,
because I'm a terrible sinner. Like, it was hilarious to watch. But I thought, what kind of a house is this? Yes.
You know, this is a child that you create.
But to be woke up with water being dumped on you and Jesus is just out, which means that somewhere in the heart of the Lord, it's not like the hurricane's not real to him. And it's not like the water's not real to him, the wind's not real to him, and oh, I don't even feel it. But there's something deep in his soul that recognizes this is every bit as harmful to me as the sunniest, most peaceful day. Like, I'm okay. The circumstances that are flying around me that look terrifying to everybody else, I know who holds me, and he just sleeps. Like, that, I think, is what we're to take out of this. We can't do that because we're creatures that live panicky and always like, what's going on? What's going on? I need to control all my circumstances. But he's just at peace, which is pretty wild.
Do you think that's because he had trust in the Father, because he knew how his earthly life was going to and supposed to end, and this was not how it was to happen?
Mm-hmm. I think that. But I also think he knows he's the Lord of the storm. I mean, ultimately, he holds authority over it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, if you have been God on the throne for centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries in front of this, you control all the storms, you control all the wind, you control all of, you're sovereign over all of creation. If you're the one who's in control of all things, I'm not so worried, you know? It's like in our house, we don't run the dishwasher and the dryer at night when we go to bed, because as a kid, I had a neighbor whose house burned down from a dryer.
I do that all the time. I shouldn't run my dishwasher at night.
And as a kid, our dishwasher caught fire in my house, and it was a big deal. So that for me is like when I'm asleep and that's, you know, I'm out of control and I can't respond and all that stuff. Like, I don't want those things coming because they're possible dangers. But if I'm literally sovereign over the dishwasher, I can turn that thing on and go to sleep and not worry about it, right? Like, it can't catch fire without my approval. This hurricane cannot devastate us without my approval. And so Jesus is living in that peace, living in that confidence, living in knowing the goodness of the Father, and that the Father's not going to surprise him. So he's asleep, right? And this is the God who controls our tomorrows.
Yeah.
He's not panicked about our lot. He's not worried about whether or not we get victory in the end. He's not worried about our, you know, whether or not we're going to be rescued and saved. And, you know, he's all the storms and everything else around us. Like, if we had the same confidence in the goodness of God that Jesus had, we could sleep through the storms, you know?
Yeah, I guess if I just trust, like, God's told me my end. My end is that I die or he returns. And either way, because I believe in Jesus and who he is and was, my future forever is set. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of the storm, that's really hard to see, though.
Yeah, 100%.
That's the hard part.
Yeah. But Jesus comes and says, hey, by the way, you're going to have storms.
Yeah, you know,
in this world.
Yeah, you will have trouble.
You're going to have trouble, tribulation. But take heart. Why?
I've overcome the world.
So, you know, we don't have the promises that our boat's not going to sink. We're not going to have promises that we don't die in a storm. But what we do have is the promise that even if we do die in the storm, we win, right? And so it's looking at all the inevitable outcomes of the way that this story plays out and knowing, like, okay, God has given me promises. Jesus had promises, trusted in them, rested in them, had peace in the middle of them. You know, we're in these storms with all the, you know, circumstances battering and chaos all around us. And we can very quickly put all of our eyes on the chaos. You know, like, this boat is not going to make it. This wind is not stopping. I can't see anything. I'm soaked. The boat is filling up with water. And you can put all, figuratively, like, yeah, look at my life. This is happening. 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 And if I'm only looking at the circumstances and not at the promises,
you're done.
I'm going to be a mess. I'm going to be an absolute mess. And it's not going to accomplish much of anything for me to be a mess. And so I just always, I found that so fascinating that he could sleep through that. So then, what? Where do we go then? It says, and they woke him and said to him, and now that's, this is the next thing that's really instructive here. Remember what we talked about? Like two really effective ways to wake somebody up, shake mm-hmm. them, and dump water on them. Now, I think this is really instructive for us. The water doesn't wake Jesus. He doesn't get off his cushion like, oh, this is water, you know, or the shaking or whatever. But when his disciples cry out to him, he's wide awake, right? Now think about that and apply that to what's going on with you right now. Like, yeah. Think about that in terms of like, okay, all the situations are going on. Where are you, God? Why isn't he responding? Why? And here you're seeing like water doesn't wake him. Wind doesn't wake him. Shaking doesn't wake him. But when he hears the voice of his disciples, he's wide awake and up. Well, how do you apply that?
I mean, that's instructive to my prayer life.
Right.
I mean, that Jesus knows that I'm going through storms, and I think he does care to a certain degree, but he also wants me to bring those mm-hmm. to him because he's awake and he's pertinent to it.
But so we don't have answers to Jesus's mind, but why? Why would he do that? Why does he want you to reach out and cry out to him in the middle of the storm?
I mean, just like any relationship, that means we care about him. Mm-hmm. We trust him. I mean, that's where trust actually gets shown. I can say I trust a bridge, but if I never go over the bridge, then I don't trust the bridge. Mm-hmm.
But there's also this other part of this, and this is like, so both of us are walking through things right now, not major things, but it's like my instinct is immediately to try to shore, and it's not a bad thing, to try to shore up every eventuality, and it could go this way, so I'm going to do this, and it could go this way, so I'm going to prep everything, and I'm going to wrap this up with bubble tape so that anything that happens, I'm in total control. And what the problem is I'm never in control. The ultimate outcome is always different than what I anticipate, and I've ended up wasting all of this energy, which, you know, you should.
There's take wisdom preparation, in that.
Totally. But if I'm putting every bit of my energy and every bit of my emotional bandwidth and my strength, my wisdom, I got to get this figured out. Me. I'm going to be exhausted.
Yeah.
And what Jesus is teaching them, like, okay, you got the boat. You know, you're rowing as hard as you can. Try that. See how it goes. But ultimately, what is it that's going to rescue you? It's when they go, our way's not working. We're not bailing fast enough.
Yeah.
This wind is not slowing down. We got to wake him up. We got to go to him. And this is when they're going to find rescue. Now, whether God changes the circumstance or not, God, if Jesus got up and just gave them a good talking to and assurance and everything else, I suspect that would have been helpful. Like, we're going to make it through it, guys. The storm's going to continue to rage, but I'm with you. I got this, right? That would have been okay. And but he does change the circumstances, which is nice. But what he's teaching them is, come to me, and this is where you're going to find your salvation. It's not in your boat. It's not in your oars. It's not in all that other stuff. It's when you come crying to me, that's when I wake up and that's when I bring you deliverance. Mm. So go to the Lord. And I was listening to a Keller sermon. And he says the prayer that they offer up is horrible.
Yeah.
And his words, he's like, this isn't an A prayer or a B. This is like a D minus prayer to the Lord, right?
Yeah, there's some attitude twinged in it.
Right. And there's an accusation in it. They say to him, teacher, do you not care that we're perishing? Because whenever we face bad circumstances, we either think, like we talked about, either I'm getting punished or
I've been forgotten.
Don't you care? Mm-hmm. Like they're saying this to a guy who's on a mission to give his life for them.
I love them, though.
Right?
They're so helpful to read.
Because like, this is
Jesus literally in their boat and they don't get it. That's awesome.
Don't you care that we're perishing? Which is a totally understandable reaction when you think God is sleeping on you. Mm. You know, like, hey, the storm's raging. Could appreciate a response right now. How about a word? How about like, you're in charge of the storm. You can stop this. We know that now. And yet sometimes it seems like God just continues to sleep. And our natural ability, our natural reaction is, do you care? Like, Do you know what I'm walking through? Like, why are you not responding? And that's where faith comes in to a big part, where it's like, okay, I not only have to look at my present circumstance, I've got to look back at where he delivered me here and where he delivered me here and where I had the same response to him then and he delivered me there, and going back through the scriptures and just seeing that, yes, sometimes the people of God go through really hard seasons and God is never absent. He's never, you know, asleep on them. Mm. You know, he might not be answering the way we want, but he cares enough to give his life for you. You can trust him with a storm, right? Yeah. So, teacher, do you not care that we're perishing? And he doesn't say, really? Like, you're coming to me with that attitude? After all I've done for you, da-da-da. Like, no, he is going to rescue them. And so it says, he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. Mm. Which is just amazing. Like, there's... so...
Yeah, because they deserve the rebuke then.
Right, correct.
I mean, you're thinking, I'm thinking Jesus should tell these guys, like, let's reward those things.
Yeah. How do you
like, ask
me?
Nicer.
Yeah, right.
Say please.
Say please. What's the magic word? So anyway, but it's also weird that he, like, you rebuking the wind. Mm. And, like, I'm looking at that way, and it's literally as, like, rebuke. Like, he later on, he'll rebuke demons. He'll rebuke the apostles for doing stupid things. And it's like, here he comes in, and it's like he's literally looking at the wind going, no, like, stop this. Peace. Be still. Which is pretty powerful words, you know? Like, where do you find those words in Scripture?
Psalm 46.
Be still. Know that I'm the Lord. Like, there's a stillness that he commands and the storms that are inside of us everywhere else. Like, he alone has the authority to command stillness and peace. And so what happens? What happens? And by the way, like, he's talking to the wind like it's an animate object. You know, like, hey, you up there, wind.
Yeah, it has thoughts of its own.
Storm. Yeah. But it goes to show you, he reigns over. I can't talk to a storm, but he can, because he creates them. He's sovereign over them. He can speak to them, which is pretty wild. Like, that is part of this miracle where it's like, hold on a minute. He's acting like he's their boss. You know, the wind and the waves are bowing down to him. Like, what? What in the world?
And those commands only come from either someone who's dumb and doesn't know what's going on, or someone who is the boss and knows it. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't only give those kinds of commands when you know that the response is going to be what you want.
Yeah, have I ever told the story of the time Caleb prayed about the storm? Do you remember?
Have before, but it's been a while.
So it blew me away because, you know, as a pastor, I'm of little faith oftentimes about prayers and all that kind of stuff, where Jesus says, you know, the greatest in the kingdom of heaven are like little children. But there was a time where I was working in our old house, probably, 15, 20 years ago, writing sermons or books or whatever. And he comes into the office, and it had been like crazy storming, like thunder claps every few seconds. Just, I mean, it was a vicious storm. And so he comes in. I don't know that Jacob had been born yet, or if he was a baby. So he's young, 2 or 3 years old. And he walks in, tired look, bed head, rubbing his eyes. And he's like, Daddy, can you make the storm stop? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of cute. And I laughed, and I was like, that's a bit above my pay grade, buddy. Yeah. And he says, well, can we ask God to make it stop? And like immediately I'm like, oh man, I want my kid to value prayer, but you know, he's going to be disappointed. This storm's been going on for, you know, a long time.
Long enough for him to be upset by it.
Correct. And so he's going to go to the Lord. He's going to ask for this thing and it's not going to happen. And it's going to make
him feel
like prayer's not valuable or effective or whatever. And so, like, I immediately go into damage control mode, and I'm like, well, Caleb, you know, God sends the storms because he loves people, and the farmers need rain for their crops, and the grass needs it to grow, and clap our hands together. And then he goes, you know, dear God, can you please make this storm stop? Amen. Thank you. And then just says, you know, I love you, Dad. You know, another night-night hug, goes to his room. And I swear from the moment he said amen, there was not another thunderclap. Mm. And I remember sitting in that room just waiting. What, like the minutes are going by like,
yeah, no way.
Surely there's going to be one. Like, so I'm the one who doesn't believe. And the Lord, in his kindness, just winked at my son. And like that was so instructive for me. But he's the one who controls the storms, and you know he can do as he wills. And in that moment, he was super kind to my son and enjoyed hearing from him, apparently. And it was instructive for me. But it says the wind ceased in that moment when he says, "Peace, be still." The wind ceased, and there was a great calm. Which that word "megas" is there again, which means like super calm.
It's matching, yeah.
It's like. Just like there was a seismos megas, now there's a calm megas. And it's, what's interesting about that? I've heard you say this before. It's immediate.
Oh, yeah.
Like the wind, done. And the sea, it's not like, okay, it's still going to chop around.
It's toning down a little bit, yeah.
No, it's like glass calm, great calm, total peace. And he said to them, and now this, I love this part. He said to them, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" Which is interesting. It's like the word there that's used for afraid is more of like cowardice. It's like timidity. Like why are you like not more bold? Why are you live constantly in this fear of what's coming? You're timid. You don't move ahead boldly is the idea. Have you still no faith? And Matthew's gospel and Luke's gospel, it asks, "Where is your faith?" Which is interesting, you know. So in this exchange, it's not saying why didn't you just believe? It's literally like, where are you putting your faith? So where are they putting their faith
in that moment? The boat, probably.
The boat, the oars, the whatever. Yeah. Like, and he's like, you're freaking out because you're looking at your effort and you're looking at your circumstances. Where should you be looking? Jesus. At him. Like, where's your faith? Because you're putting it somewhere. Mm. And so why are you so afraid? And then it says, so he's like, why are you timid? And then it says, and they were filled with great fear and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? And I love the way that this contrasts here, because it's like in the storm, Jesus is like, you were behaving afraid. You were timid. Then he says, storm, stop. And then what happens? They go from being afraid to having great fear. Now all of a sudden it's like the one who commands the hurricane is in the boat. And now they are more terrified with what that means for their life than the storm had ever made them. Like, and they're saying, it's a great question. Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? What's the answer to that? Who is it?
It's God.
This is God. And so now I want you to imagine, you know, being in that experience where all of a sudden you realize that the one who's been calling you to all these things, the one who has absolute right on your right to your life, everything is now in the boat with you. Mm. And there's something that is both comforting and extremely terrifying about recognizing that your life is no longer your own. Mm. That you're in the relationship with the one who controls the storms. You're in relationship with the one who has 100% absolute right over every part of your life. Your money, your sexuality, your everything belongs to him. Your body, everything you are, your career, all of it belongs to him. And now God's in the boat with you. And he's saying, I want it all. I want your faith. I want you focused on me. I want your whole life. And then he looks up and says, storm, stop it. Hush. Peace. Well, okay, that was a circumstance that was going to pass. But now I'm in an everlasting commitment with a God who demands my all, and he's never going away. Can you see how that's terrifying?
Yeah.
What's most terrifying about your relationship with God? What would you say? How would you answer that? Like, why would you be terrified to have God in your boat?
I think, like you said, his call is for the totality of my life, and I don't like that. That there's always going to be something that I think foolishly, and the rest of what I say will be foolish, that I think, oh, I can control this better than God can. Mm-hmm. In the midst of my storms, like, oh, no, God, like, look at how I'm going to do this. I'm going to go talk to this person. I'm going to get to the finish line just like I thought I would, and just watch how I handle this situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't like, I mean, I guess it's pride and arrogance. That's the root of all of us. Like, I don't like giving things to Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it on a previous episode where he goes to the guy at the Pool of Bethesda and says, do you want to be healed? And there's a very real sense. Like, I have thought so much about that verse where, you know, God's in the boat and he's like, I want all of you. And with that will come a life of joy and purpose and meaning and everything else, but it's going to hurt. There's going to be storms. It's going to stretch you. It's going to be scary at times, but you keep your faith on me. Don't look to your oar. Don't look to your boat. Don't look at the storm. You look at me and trust that everything's going to be okay. And I'm going to give you a life of meaning and purpose, but it's going to be scary at times, right? Just because we're fallen and it's almost impossible for us not to see all that stuff and to look at all that stuff and to fixate. But it's like Jesus is compassionate enough to continually be like, hey, where's your faith? Eyes up here.
Yeah. You know, like, stay focused.
That's right. And that's awesome. But it's normal. Like in Psalm 139, I love the fact that you have David who's like, how do I get away from you? You know, like, can I hide? Like, if I go to the depths of hell, you're there. If I go to heaven, you're there. If I go here, you're there. If I go there, you're there. I can't get away from you. You control my life. You know all of my darkest thoughts. You see all of my shameful behaviors. And he does anyway. But now,
yeah.
If I say that I belong to you, there's nowhere for me to hide. There's nowhere for me to run. There's no aspect of my life that I get to hold on to and say, yes, God, you can come this far, but no further, because this stuff over here, this is really precious to me, and I can't give that up. Like, this isn't a negotiation anymore. And I think, in part, they're looking at this being like, okay, this whole discipleship thing, us following him, because this is still pretty early on in their following of Jesus.
It's a lot to take in.
This is now like, oh, that's who you are. Okay, and you got to imagine their next conversation. Like, okay, they get to the next shoreline. When he talks after he's just told a hurricane to go away, what is that like? Jesus, I don't think that's a good idea because, like, you don't have a seat at the table. Yeah. His wisdom wins.
You just listen.
He tells hurricanes to shut up. Like, your voice should no longer matter, and yet it does. Your voice is what wakes him from the slumber, not the storm, which is pretty wild. It gets back to that paradigm of God is so incredibly powerful that we should never approach him, and yet he's so incredibly humble and kind that he insists upon us approaching him. And so in your God, you have the God who controls all things, is sovereign over all things, powerful over all things. And in your God, you have a God who says, I love you enough that I'll lay down my life.
Yeah.
You put those together and that's a pretty incredible God. And beyond this, like we can't go through this story without pointing out like this is making them. Eventually they're going to realize like this is kind of like what happened to Jonah. Like in Jonah, what's going on? The big storm comes, you know, Jonah's running away from God. He gets on a boat with sailors that are going to Tarshish. Jonah's disobedience. I don't want to do God's mission over in Assyria, so I'm going to run away and go to Tarshish. And then God hurls a storm on the sea because of Jonah's disobedience. And what's Jonah doing?
Sleeping.
He's sleeping, which means he's got a false sense of security. Like, I'm going to sleep through the storm. And they come and they're like, how in the world could you be sleeping? Wake up and call upon your God. Like, what are you doing? And so he awakes and, you know, they go through the whole thing. Like, well, it's because I'm running away from my God. This is his justice. The only way that this is going to be fixed is not by us turning around and going back and obeying God. You're going to have to throw me over water, into the water. and then the seas will go calm. And that's exactly what happens. Like Jonah, they throw him overboard. He goes into the water. And immediately, the seas are calm and the storm stops. And everybody on that boat said, does what? Like,
they worship that God now.
They worship God. They make offerings. They're like, oh, clearly Jonah's God is the one who controls the wind and the waves. And so because Jonah went into the water, his God calmed the storm. So now you've got all the disciples that are freaking out in this boat. The storm comes and Jesus is asleep, which is crazy part of the story. And no doubt later on, they're like,
oh,
that's Jonah. That's like Jonah. Except it's not Jonah getting, Jesus doesn't pick up Simon and throw him in the water and be like, okay,
now we're good. Now.
We need some calm. He looks at the storm and says, stop, which means he's not Jonah. He's Jonah's God in this boat with them. And that's that's just a real comfort that the God of the storm awakens not to the wind, not to the waves, not to the water, not to the shaking. He awakens to the cries of his people, even when they're unfaithful cries. And he calls us to say, hey, where's your faith? Put your eyes on me and remember that I am the Lord of the storm. And I'm in the boat with you. We got this. Amen?
Amen. How are you going to apply this to your week?
I've already worked on that this morning. So, like, in one of the crazy situations that we're walking through right now, which is just, these situations are so exhausting and unnecessary. But I sent this to the people that are struggling that I'm trying to help. And I texted him. I said, I find it cool that the Lord was not woken by the seismos megas, the great shaking, which, by the way, that expression is only, it's used in like apocalyptic language, and it literally means a great earthquake, great shaking. So it's the fact that it's used for a storm on a sea is weird, but it literally means like apocalyptic shaking, like a big deal, which is literal the words for the storm in Greek as the boat's filled with water. Two pretty sure ways to wake someone, shake them or dump water on them. Jesus snoozes, but the moment his disciples call to him, he awakens. That's instructive for us today, methinks. And the question, where is your faith, is not a bad takeaway either. And then this is, Keller made the cool observation that Jesus is not asking them whether they have faith. He's asking them where they have placed their faith. I love that. Okay, now I'm done. So even going into this situation today, and there's always these situations.
Yeah, it's not going to stop.
It's just stopping and going, okay, what am I looking at as my source of rescue here? Where's my faith? Is it, because if it's in how much I prepared for the meeting and how much documentation we have and how much this and how much that's not peace giving. I'm not going to be like, oh, now I can rest. It has to be going to the Lord and being like, this is beyond my pay grade.
Yeah.
Just like I said to Caleb, you're the one who controls the storm. I don't know what you're going to do with this storm, but I know I belong to you, and I know I'm going to be okay even if the boat goes down. And then I'm going to sleep in peace or do my best to. I think that's it. It's looking at the sovereignty of God and his goodness and being like, okay, I've done what I can do.
Yeah.
I'm ultimately placing my trust in you, and I'll be okay then.
It's good.
There's comfort in that.
Yeah.
How about for you?
I think what stuck out to me personally is the disciples had to keep rowing, which I think is interesting. I forget that they are actually having to row that boat. Yeah. So mine is to keep rowing, but ask Jesus more. And then I think the big one was to use my fear as my barometer of how well I'm doing in that with my faith.
Yeah.
Like to keep on checking myself like, oh no, Will, you're fearful right now. You may not want to say that out loud, but like you need to go to Jesus with that. Like it's not doing anything for you. Or it's doing something good for me. It's telling me you need to go to Jesus.
Yeah, that's it.
And to use that more than just the debilitating worry.
I had a seminary professor one time who said, you know, metal detectors, like you go around the people on the beach looking for coins and watches and jewelry and everything else. It was a professor who said, I mean, it stuck with me, but he said, you know, fear and anger are like you know, they're metal detectors for idolatry in the human heart.
Mm.
When you find yourself afraid,
yeah,
there's something out there that means more to you than the Lord in that moment, and you're freaking out that it's getting shaken. And in that moment, you need to go to the Lord and be like, I trust you, and I can't do anything about this. You're more precious to me than whatever is causing this fear, so I'm going to offer it up as a sacrifice to you, and here, like, please take the fear. I'm casting my anxieties on you, and I'm dealing with this idolatry, this misordered love that's causing me so much fear. And then the other one is anger, because if somebody tries moving your cheese, you know, or messing around in your life or threatening something that you love, like anger, there's good anger, but a lot of times anger is like, don't take my thing. Like, those two things are really good at detecting idolatry. And like you said, driving you to Jesus, who's the only one who can give you a remedy that's meaningful for fear and anger and loss and all those kinds of things. It's a powerful story. I love this story.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of The Bible Show. Join us next time as we go into another story where Jesus is in the midst of a storm on the Sea of Galilee. And this time, he's not in the boat with the disciples, but he comes walking to them on top of the waters. Join us then. God bless. Thanks for listening to The Bible Show. If you enjoyed this podcast, please remember to like and subscribe and leave a kind review to help us in the world of tech algorithms. Also, feel free to share with a friend. We'll see you next week with another episode of The Bible Show.